to present her executive officer's report.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to provide some updates to the EO report that's in the packet, in the board packet, and some other updates. And then Lori Kemper will join me at the end for the quarterly violation report. So let me start with some housekeeping issues. We are proposing our schedule for board meetings for the following year, 2016. And the board members in their packet have some suggested dates with some possible changes in red and for your consideration. And these, when we adopt these each year, allows staff to at least negotiate with places like what we're sitting in today for contracts to at least get time set aside. But we can always change these. So I don't know if the board members had any thoughts about this schedule or if this was acceptable to the board.
I'll have to check my calendar. Did anyone else have any comments on the?
I have no objection from what I know now.
I was going to say it all works a year in advance.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's hard to judge, but as anything, we always get to adjust that. So if anyone has any other suggestions or changes, please let me know. Before I go to the next item, let me just mention another housekeeping but important issue. There's construction going on in this hotel. So the ladies' room across the way is open, just no mirrors. For the gentlemen, I'm sorry the facilities aren't as available, so you'll need to go to the front desk and ask for a key for a facility. So I just want to make that rather important announcement for everyone. So another housekeeping issue that I'd like to share with the board and public, we each year have standing reports that we provide to the board either before the board's informational item or in the executive officer's report. And so, like the schedule of meetings for next year, we're proposing a schedule of standing reports for the board's consideration for next year. So I would ask the board to look at that to see if they have any suggestions. A couple of the reports were suggesting set twice a year to become once a year because some of the information is becoming a little bit more routine, and that's the status of the basin plan amendment since we've now adopted those changes, and salt nutrient management plans. The other change is to expand the City of Barstow's reporting to also include not just their nitrate but the perchlorate pollution, so you have a more complete report on because those two plumes are commingled. The last item, which I'll talk about more further in my report, is on grazing, which we have traditionally given the board an update in June on the Bridgeport grazing waiver. And given decisions by the state board yesterday, they're asking regions to look at grazing more holistically. So we would recommend to expand that to include all grazing activities in the region in June. And those are the suggestions from staff for your consideration.
Are there any comments from the board regarding those suggestions?
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to report on some of our staffing changes. That's always good news. At least I like to think it's good news. I'd like to also mention that we sometimes, the state government, are allowed to give our employees superior accomplishment awards for excellent work. And so we were thrilled to give Karen Patterson, a scientific aide in our Victorville office, the Superior Accomplishment Award. She really goes above and beyond in the work that she does with us. We're excited and lucky to have someone of that caliber and talent that she brings to her office, young energy that we get. And she's our GIS expert and other things. So, and, it's nice to get a small monetary benefit with this, so it's always a good thing for the employees. The other employee that received a Superior Accomplishment Award this year is a bit more shy, and that's Ann Holden, who you heard from yesterday. So she also received an award. Okay, that's all right. That's okay.
Hers was actually a sustained Superior.
Oh, sustained Superior.
Which means that for over 3 years she has worked tirelessly on PG&E. So,
I had to do with that. Yeah, so we're excited for both employees. That their hard work is noticed. All of our employees work hard, and we've got so many talented employees everywhere, so I wish I could give a award to everyone, But let me move into some new hires. We've been fortunate with some changes and also just transition. We've hired Jane Covey as our new scientific aide for the TMDL Basin Planning Unit up in the Tahoe office. So she's worked in the Tahoe area for many years for the Resource Conservation Districts and State Parks, so we're real thrilled that she's joining our organization. Brian Judge also joined our non-point source unit on August 17th, and there's a little write-up on him in our EO report under the budget. He was the one PY extra our organization grew this past year, and that's for the timber fee that's being charged to deal with timber issues and non-point source issues. So I know Doug Cushman is thrilled to have the extra help. In our South Lahontan area, we've had some additions as well. Jeffrey Fitzsimmons, who's sitting in the front row here, joined our land disposal unit with Patrice Copeland. He brings over 27 years of experience to us as a registered geologist in the private sector, so we're really honored to have someone of that caliber and talent come to our organization. There's a very nice write-up in your packet on them, give a little more detail on their background. But again, for state government, it's quite exciting to have someone like that join us. Another new change, although you've known this name before, is Todd Batty. We had, if you recall, two positions in our DOD unit, but they were limited term, which meant there was a shelf life of them for 2 years, which if you're in the slot is not a comforting place to be. So we were able to switch that over with the very hard work of Cindy Mitten and Mike and Lori to convince the State Board to change those into permanent slots. That was not easy, but it was done. So Todd Batty was hired into a permanent slot. The second slot, which was opened up when Shannon Utley left for the State Board, Alonzo Poach came to join us. And Alonzo has 6 years in private industry that he brings his expertise to, so we're very thrilled to have that. But he was a former student assistant at Lahontan back in the day, so he's kind of returning. So we're very happy about that as well. So welcome to both of you. I'm going to shift up north to Lake Tahoe Science. I, too, am attending a conference on Monday of the scientists at UNR to discuss Lake Tahoe and specifically issues of nearshore and other things. Lori's also speaking on the group, and I'm at the plenary to talk about science, particularly how we use science to make some of the decisions that we did in the Tahoe TMDL, so I'm excited about going to that event on Monday. But as you know, the Tahoe Basin, we've been working on collaboration to improve that in the basin amongst the various partners and the scientists, and I think we're reaching an area where we're getting to a good place because TRP has adopted their new regional plan update. We have our TMDL. We're working well with the state of Nevada. And the next stage, I think, is then to work with the scientists about what is the next generation of information we need to make the next level of decisions, particularly on nearshore pollution, where science will be very important to help inform us as we go forward in that effort. So we've been meeting with the scientists on the Nevada side and California side. Laura and I attended a meeting of the scientists. There's a new scientific council that was created by statute up there, a bi-state one. And so I just wanted to let you know that we are really working closely with the scientists. We've proposed a number of management questions because we'd like to, like, think far ahead. You know, what are the next things we're going to grapple with in the next 5 to 7 years? What kind of science questions should we be asking so that the next time we update our permits or our requirements, we're informed? So it's a very good partnership, and I'm thrilled that we're doing that. There's a write-up in my report on our aluminum sampling project that you will see about what we have learned about aluminum, both in dredging as well as naturally occurring aluminum, and how to handle those issues. That's an example of a perfect scientific problem that we need to work with our scientists about. How do we deal with that? How do we manage that better when we do our next round of dredging next year in Lake Tahoe? And so we are going to send, you know, some of our talented scientists to that sampling in-house. We have a lot of talented scientists that do in-house scientific work. And so we're sending that to the scientists to get their inputs and having a meeting with them about that. So I just wanted to share that all with you. And for those of you that couldn't attend the Lake Tahoe Summit, that Senator Hiller and Feinstein and Reed help sponsor each year. It was a great event and more collaboration of the various partners, and so They're hoping to have President Obama come next year, so definitely put that on your calendars for next year. Also in your packet is an update on our timber waiver compliance, and I just want to give a shout out to staff and the U.S. Forest Service. As you recall, many years ago, I couldn't have reported that we had 100% compliance from our forestry friends. So I do think this is a huge milestone that we have 100% compliance. We have no water quality problems, and we're working very well with them to work through the issues. So it's, again, a shout-out to the staff and to the Forest Service. We're working with them now on beginning discussions with LTVMU on merging our South Shore WDRs with the timber waiver to improve efficiency, reduce paperwork for them, and reduce paperwork for us, and kind of streamline the process. That's our next project with the Tahoe Basin Forestry folks. I'm now going to shift south again to MolliCorp. And in my EO write-up, there's a discussion of MolliCorp, their situation, the bankruptcy. And I just want to give you a slight update on what has happened. In our report, we had mentioned that they had ceased mining ore, but we're still processing it. We have learned most recently that they have now ceased processing the ore, which is unfortunate. I don't know what that means for the future of MolliCorp. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I know we were talking about having a tour of MolliCorp next year. That may or may not happen because of their current situation. So we'll just keep you updated as things go on with that. I'm also going to mention our report is our dairy status report, which is in the back of your EO report. It's on base 9-18, because you're looking for it, Keith. We're going to shift our efforts to working on a general order. This is going to be similar to what some of the other regions do about a general order to try to get them enrolled. A lot of the other regions use ways of encouraging compliance by allowing them to form groups, cooperatives, if you will, similar to the irrigated ag in our Central Valley region. So we're hoping to build upon that as well as factor in the unique situations in our own region. We'll continue to work with them in terms of replacement water. You notice in your write-up also is the nitrate study that GSM and Jay Cass and Mike Plasiak worked on in the Hinckley community. And so that we will still continue working potentially through cleanup and abatement orders to get replacement water to those that need drinking water. So I'm very encouraged as we work with them in stakeholder meetings. As you'll notice in the write-up, we'll start this fall with the dairy industry. So, again, we're excited about that. That will be a lot of work, though. I'm not sure when we will be able to bring that to the board, but we'll be bringing it soon. And as I mentioned, replacement order, I do have another cleanup and abatement order that's still before me regarding the replacement water that we're sort of doing something similar that we did with PG&E's at the prosecution team will be meeting with the discharger of B&E Dairy and trying to see if they come to some consensus and bring us back some ideas on replacement water. I'm going to shift out of my executive director's report now to just general updates on issues in our region. One is on GRAP, Grazing Regulatory Action Project, and this was an effort that Region 6 led with the other regions to explore whether we should have a statewide policy on grazing. We had a number of listening sessions, which were quite lively, up and down the state. And the preponderance of the comments that we received from the industry and others is that we don't want to have a statewide approach. We prefer to work with the regional boards. We prefer to have it tailored. Many ideas came out of that. So with that information, it went back to the state board yesterday in a resolution that they adopted yesterday unanimously that discontinued the statewide approach on a grazing policy and instead asked the regional boards to resume their efforts. But what they asked the regional boards to do is actually reach out to the stakeholders and the landowners and the environmental organizations and kind of work with them in a collaborative way to see what approach fits best uniqueness of the regions, the needs of water quality, as well as factoring in economic considerations, practicality, new science. So we'll be working with our stakeholders and our landowners, U.S. Forest Service, BLM, LADWP, and others, on how best to approach that. They also encourage that in certain situations, voluntary efforts may work, as well as opposed to, it doesn't always have to be regulatory. But they asked for effectiveness, which means monitoring, and how to judge whether a voluntary effort does or doesn't work, or regulatory effort does or doesn't work. So these are all things we're going to be exploring. We do work closely with our other regions, in particular 1 and 5, North Coast and Central Valley, because that's where a lot of the grazing is in California. So we have some uniformity in how we're dealing with the grazing industry, because that's only fair to them.
Yes.
Did the State Board offer to back their request to the regional boards with any resources?
Well, they did talk about maybe dusting off and improving a 1990 document on regional BNP. So I'm hopeful. I've been encouraging that Prop 1 monies could be used for that. I'm not sure if they will or won't. But it does beg the question, because there's an interest in seeing the regional boards move forward. Like, what are you doing? And a lot of grazing activities are not charged a fee to generate funding to pay for staff, except for Region 5, who includes it in their irrigated ag program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unfortunately, fee is a four-letter word sometimes, and so we'll have to work with them. But right now, we don't have additional resources, so we're going to have to prioritize in our regions where we want to spend our time or not. We have, I don't have the exact number, between 8 and 10-ish spots in our region where we have numbers a little bit higher than they should be. And I think each one is unique and different, how we're going to have to address them. I mean, they really are very different. So we're probably going to have to spend some time internally deciding where our priorities are, where our time should be spent, and how do we handle each of these ones in their own unique situation. So stay tuned. We'll be giving the board updates as we go forward, and we have to report back to the State Board in 1 year on how our, not just us, all the regions, how are we doing, what are we doing. I'm now going to move to another item that the board will remember from probably 2 years ago now. This is the Basin Plan Amendment on Pesticide Use in Water Bodies. As you recall, the board made a change to their Basin Plan, and it was submitted to the State Board for their approval, which they approved, and then it was with the US EPA, and there it stood for quite a bit while we were having meetings back and forth on technical issues. We've received notice from US EPA that they are poised to approve it shortly.
We got it.
Oh, hey, I was going to say, exciting. Congrats and condolences, because there's a lot of work involved now as we begin this. As many of these things, of course, the good news, we've got it. The bad news is we don't have the staff to do it. So like anything else, we'll have to prioritize and shift as we get these requests. So staff are already, you know, working internally. Mary Ferrini Wagner is working on some internal guidelines about how do we implement it. We'll at some point share that with stakeholders to get their input. I'm not sure when we'll do that because we're kind of working on it this fall. But we'll be, you know, things we're going to be grappling with internally are the workload and how we're going to distribute it among staff, given how many applications we have yet to see come in, the guidelines that you just heard me mention, and outreach to our stakeholders about that so that it's a process that works for everyone. And right now we're sort of planning to look at things existing in new cases. A lot of lakes in our region already use pesticides and herbicides in their applications and have for years, so we're trying not to disrupt existing practices because they depend upon those. So that's the part of the outreach we're going to be doing with folks. But the discharge is part of the process. I just want to tell you, just remind you, is that they will have to apply to the board for consideration. They may or may not have to do CEQA depending upon the situation. They will definitely have to do some sort of public outreach, no matter what application, and they'll have to do an alternatives analysis before they come to the board and say, we'd like to use these chemicals. Some existing facilities just to mention, are like Arrowhead, Silverwood Lake, Lake Gregory, Silver Lake, and all the LADWP, many of the LADWP lakes. For new, because we've been approached by folks, LA, Lake Tahoe, it's the Tahoe Keys, marina owners, have property owners want to discuss that. So these are things we'll be working on over the fall and the spring. Just want to let you know that.
Patty, question. When they talk about pesticides, does that also include larvicides?
Yeah.
Did you say herbicides or
larvicides?
Yes.
For mosquitoes.
Yes. Nematocides, all that side.
Yeah.
I can't remember if you really I should stand up just for the rest of the public. I'm Lori Kemper, for the record. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer. And when we did the Basin Plan Amendment, I can't remember if you were here, Kimberly, before that. I don't think you were when the staff brought it to the board. What we did is we actually built in exemption. So it's a prohibition on the discharge of pesticides to water, and it allows the board to grant exemptions. But the board did grant exemptions for mosquito and vector control. That had been something that is ongoing in our region that essentially violated the standards we had in our basin plan, and this was a way to acknowledge that kind of work. So that has been basically streamlined, and there is a statewide MPDS permit the counties can get for things like vector control. So that's not the workload. We're more concerned about the herbicides, like at Lake Arrowhead, where they've used herbicides for years. They file for the statewide MPDS permit, but they never had authorization from the board. That they're going to have to kind of come back to us and talk about their techniques and what they've learned, and we'll start looking more closely at their monitoring. And then, as Patty said, the new projects are where we expect the board to be able to take some more time and use some more discretion. It's going to be difficult to work with folks who've been doing it for years, but there's going to be some challenges about meeting other standards in our basin plan for some of those projects. So,
thank you.
I'm going to shift over to the Truckee River Watershed Council, and that's something you don't see quite often in government, but we save money. So if the board recalls, the board authorized a CEF where we funded money to the Truckee River Watershed Council to deal with three restoration projects. One of the projects, Dry Creek, came in under budget, which is great news. So that left $15,000 on the table, and council was clever, and they had a project ready to go for $15,000. So I signed a change in the budget line item recently to authorize them to spend that additional $15,000 on the Merrill Davis Stream and restoration, which is presently under construction. They're actually waiting for a permit from us. They have their shovels just right on the edge of the meadow right now, ready to go. To work on that, and it's a site that spans about 5 acres, so it's a good size project of river and meadow restoration. It's going to improve erosion, meadow function, and improve the riparian habitat. So, again, it's always nice to know when you save money in government and can spend it on something else worthy, and so we did on that. So, very excited. And that ends my field report for the moment. So I'm going to ask Lori to join me to talk about the quarterly violations report.
All right, good morning, Chair, members of the board. I'm Lori Kemper, the Assistant Executive Officer, and at Bate Stamp 9-34 is the quarterly violations report for the second quarter 2015. So this is covers the period April to June 30th, and in the table, you can see there are some violations associated with inspections. It seems like this year our staff is doing a better job of getting out in the field early. Part of that is the weather has allowed construction to begin in some of the higher elevations in our region. And so there are you do see a number of VMP violations. That I think I counted 4 separate Caltrans projects that were underway, beginning May 1st, and every one of them had violations that our inspectors found but were corrected using our staff enforcement letter. So we're trying to address those violations with the lowest form of enforcement. We only have, during the second quarter, we only had 2 Priority 1 violations, and those were with the City of Barstow and the wastewater treatment facility that has historical nitrate pollution. Their current discharges are in compliance
but it's the legacy nitrate that we're still working with them to come up with a remediation plan that can also account for the perchlorate issues. So that's still underway, and staff's working with the City of Barstow to submit, to look for grant funding and to come up with a proposal that will work for both pollutants. And then I just wanted to, Patty had mentioned aluminum and the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association. They completed their dredging project quite early this spring, and it went very well. We had a lot of staff out there, except for the fact that the samples they took during dredging did show violations of aluminum, and then that's what prompted us to investigate that further. They did some additional testing, and we sent a scientific aide, William Chen, around to collect beach samples around the Tahoe Basin, and that is the results of that survey are on bait stamp 9-9. It's an EO report item on the aluminum. We're pulling all that information together, and we're going to be sharing it with the scientists as well as with the Nearshore Working Group, which includes all the agencies, so that anybody who's taking on a project around the basin to be aware of the potential for when you disturb lake sands, or maybe not lake sands, because some of these sands got to the beach either from a storm drain or because they were imported, that you might have you might create conditions of chronic toxicity. So the violations were because of the dredging, they stirred up bottom sediments that created numbers of aluminum in the water column that were toxic to aquatic life, both the chronic and we exceeded the acute standard. So we're also considering that information as part of the marina permit update that the board's going to be seeing next spring, because that permit allows maintenance dredging and has a number of BMPs in place, but we may have to rethink enclosures and try to minimize the toxic conditions as much as possible. So that stuff that was still under investigation, and we're not planning to take any kind of enforcement action against the Tahoe Keys property owners for those violations, and we'd kind of let them know when we asked them to sample that it was really just we're trying to gather information. We were hoping to verify we didn't have a problem, but we now know we do, and so we're going to try to address that in future permitting. The other thing that we worked out with the Keys Property Owner Association is their project that we had permitted allowed them to use that SAM for beach replenishment, and after we got those results, we had to test the sand and just to try to find out if there were some areas that had higher concentrations that we could require that material to be hauled out. And what we found was some consistency in the total aluminum in the sand, but when we tried to do, we used a test in the lab where you shake it with deionized water and look at what aluminum becomes dissolved in the water column, we got a lot of variable results, and so we decided that we're going to basically let them keep the sand on the beach. They're moving it around, and the lake is dropping, so there's no water in contact with the sand, and there may not be for quite a while until the lake level comes up, so we're going to be asking Patty to amend their water quality cert order to have a... They've submitted a monitoring plan to us that we mostly like. Our board, our staff's reviewing that right now, and they're going to prepare an order amendment for Patty to require this monitoring to occur once the lake comes up, because we're looking at having them sample nearshore waters to see if we can find aluminum right there at the shore zone interface. Our hunch, I mean, again, as our hunch is that the levels aren't that high, and because the sand is spread out, it won't create toxic conditions right there in the nearshore, but we're going to have them test to verify that that's the case. And then there are other... Heavenly Valley Resort, and the board adopted a new permit in May for Heavenly Valley, and we identified as part of that update that they've had ongoing problems with meeting their effluent requirements from their large parking lot at the main base lodge, and so they are continuing to see those violations in their most recent monitoring report, but the permit already includes corrective action that they're required to give us a feasibility report to analyze the effectiveness of their treatment system and to develop some additional actions they can take at that location. And interestingly enough, their drainage goes down Ski Run and enters the Ski Run marina, and the Ski Run marina owner he noticed some dirty water coming into his marina in July, and we are working with him and the city of South Lake Tahoe and Caltrans, and it'll also involve some of this heavenly drainage sometimes reaches the ski run marina. That area has mostly been treated with basins, but there's some water that gets there that may need additional treatment, so the city is looking at that, and the marina is also looking at opportunities to continue to reduce pollutant loadings there. And then on the table of on pending formal enforcement cases, Patty had mentioned the V&E Dairy. The staff did meet with Eldert Van Dam. He was here last night also. He's the owner of the V&E Dairy. Staff's already met with him to discuss the cleanup order. We had a draft cleanup order out on the street to require replacement water in a fairly large area downgrading of the dairy. And it's been a confusing neighborhood because part of the neighborhood is supplied with Golden State water and part of the neighborhood is not. So they've kind of narrowed the number of residents that are likely affected, and Eldert's going to do additional sampling of their residential wells prior to us, the prosecution team, going to, and the discharger going back to Patty and making some recommendations on how to finalize that order or whether we can reach some kind of agreement. So, and then the other pending items I just want to touch on, I wanted to show you that Spalding Track resident Sheila Miner. She, I think, is our very, very last person at Eagle Lake who has not complied with the cease and desist or the cleanup and abatement or cease and desist orders to require them to connect to the sewer system. And she was the one that we had difficulty serving in the past. I think she works as a process server and lives in Susanville. So so we have her there as like someone we still intend to. At this point, we're ready to issue an ACL, but I'm just letting you know that that may or may not happen in a seamless sort of way, and she's the last one. So if you have any thoughts on that, you give them to me directly, because we can drop it right now if you want, but that's where that is. And then some other things that aren't on your list, things sometimes we have violations that occurred, you know, in previous quarters. You don't see them, but staff is working on those things, and one of those is the Lake Tahoe Laundry Works. This is an old dry, it was a self-serve dry cleaning machine at a laundromat at the South Y Center, where the Rayleigh Shopping Center is, that discharged PCE into the groundwater. And they've been operating a cleanup, a remediation system on site for many years, but there is off-site contamination. We'd reached a settlement with them last year for them to pay for replacement water for two private supply wells, and that project actually was completed just recently. The property owners decided to connect to Lucan's Brother Community Water rather than use their wells. And but we are still interested in getting more information on the extent of the offsite contamination and have the discharger look at feasibility study at whether it is reasonable to address the offsite contamination. Because right now on site they're actually seeing numbers in the ones, in, you know, like less than 10 parts per billion of PCE on site, but we're finding offsite contamination in the 20s and 50s, and it is either threatening or has impacted not only those residential wells, but also one of the Lucan's or two of the Lucan's water supply wells. So we before I left town on Tuesday, we sent out a draft cleanup and abatement order. And this is authored by Lisa Dernbach, and we've been working with a couple of the attorneys at the Office of Enforcement. So that is now out on the street for comment until October 30th. So that's something that Patty will be looking at comments and likely just doing a paper hearing and issuing an order requiring additional investigation and a feasibility study. And it kind of embodies their ongoing cleanup and monitoring at the site. The other thing related to that area is Lucan's Brothers has applied for some of the new Prop 1 money to pay for wellhead treatment, because they have five wells. Four of them have been shut down because of PCE contamination in the South Y area, and they are currently paying South Tahoe PUD for water because they have a connection. They have an intertie with South Tahoe Public Utility District. So they've applied for that money. Lisa Dernbach applied for cleanup and abatement account money last year to do some additional groundwater investigation that's not associated with the Lake Tahoe Laundry Works. It's actually located more north on Highway 89 on Emerald Bay Road, where we have a number of PCE hits that we got from, there's a restaurant that had a private supply well that had very high levels of PCE. They had to connect to Lukens, and there were some monitoring wells from old underground tank cases that we were able to go sample. So we just received word that Department of General Services has signed the contracts to spend the cleanup and abatement account money to do a groundwater investigation in that area. So we're hoping to get that done before the winter and do a hydropunch investigation. This would be along the 89 corridor heading out of town. While we're still talking about Tahoe, I just want to let you know that the Tahoe Queen last spring had a, I think it was in the previous quarter's violation report, they had a hydraulic oil spill related to miscommunication between the guy who was working on the engine and the guy who every day is required to turn the engine on to test the boat, because the boat hasn't been operating because of the low lake levels, so they spilled hydraulic fluid, but because they didn't have the line capped off. And we requested additional information with the 13267 ordered, which they petitioned, but they also requested for an extension, and we just recently got the information that we requested, so our staff's evaluating that in terms of our next step, if we're going to issue a ACL or not. And also staff in the enforcement unit let me know that the Meeks Bay Marina has ongoing violations of their BMPs. These are stormwater BMPs that they were required to install a number of years ago, and they've been kind of operating with temporary BMPs that aren't necessarily effective. So I was reflecting on Dr. Horn had said, I hope staff's out getting ready for the winter, you know, and all this rain. And that's an example of where our enforcement staff was out and noticed they're not ready for the winter, and they're behind schedule in terms of getting permanent BMPs. So we're going to help them get prepared for the winter. So that's likely a follow-up, and whether it's a staff enforcement, we'll try to do that, you know, to get them ready for the winter. And then the last thing I wanted to let you know is that the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, the board approved the SEP, and we did just receive approval from Chris Kerrigan from the Office of Enforcement on the use of additional funds for the SEP. He was on vacation for a week. Anyway, it was difficult to get him to respond, but we did. And so now, and I know that our attorney's been working with L.A. Department of Water and Power's attorneys on the final settlement language, so I think we're ready to go, and I may be signing that today or tomorrow, and that we really want to get that money to the Indian National Forest so they can get projects done before the winter.
It's
so
late.
That's that. I think they're ready to go, and so yeah. And L.A. is ready to write the check, so we're going to try to get that done the next week or two. And that is all I have. Any questions?
Any questions? Dr. Horn first.
So, first of all, just a note for the record, the Lahontan Board sets precedent once again, breaking the 50% level from the State Board, so good on us. Just a question about the ski run issue. Mm-hmm. Would that be a place to consider having another pump and treat system, or is it not?
You know, I thought I had actually met with the ski run. Patty was out, and the ski run marina owner had asked to meet with Patty and I just to talk about a lot of big picture things. And I was happy to report he didn't complain about our staff. He was complaining about other agency staff to me, but that was. In general, he was talking about the problems of that marina, because it collects the stormwater. You know, there's stormwater pipes that enter his marina that has the plywood or the sheet pile walls there. And I had let him know that I thought Caltrans had a project in the works for that intersection. And when I went back to the office and I talked to Bud Amorfini, it turned out Caltrans is pretty much done in that area. And so the reality is that area, the runoff that comes off of the highway and the neighborhoods above Ski Run, is going into all those basins, the Osgood Basin that we call it, the Osgood, it's behind Chevy's, and those big wetland basins. So there's a lot of infiltration going on, and there's a little meadow behind the motel that used to be the Super 8, now the Knights Inn. There's actually some discussion with the Conservancy of them buying that property, the Knights Inn property, and doing some additional restoration that would increase the capacity of putting water in the ground, like in a meadow or a wetland. So we're hopeful there. The city, I think, has done its own analysis and knows that they don't quite have all the capacity they need to get all their runoff, you know, in the ground. So they are looking at some enhancements. Caltrans let us know that actually the pump and treat, that they actually get water right up to the ski run intersection, water pipes back to the pump and treat system from the from the west during corner of that intersection. So their runoff that they collect between Ski Run and State Line is limited, and most of it goes in the city's basins, but some of it, I think there is a small part of the intersection that does go directly to the lake. And I think the other thing we found out is that overflow from the meadow behind the motel goes directly to the marina there. But in general, I mean, I'd say it's like 80 or 90% like taken care of. So it's not an opportunity
not,
for
right.
the pump and treat, but there is some enhancements needed. And then there is some debate about whether the conditions in the marina are related to the enclosed marina itself, you know, that it grows more weeds and collects all the, you know, the boating-related oils and greases and whatever versus what comes in off of the pavement, you know, and that may be difficult to assess. But there's been, the interesting part of this is the marina owner has spoken, and I don't know if he hired Jeff Schladau or Dr. Jeff Schladau from UC Davis did some investigations, because we'd always said there was some of that material might be coming from like the Upper Truckee River with littoral drift along the lakeshore. But when they went out and examined sands outside the marina, they're much cleaner than the material in the marina. And they conducted dredging about 6 or 7 years ago. And they're saying, wow, we have a lot of really fine material collected in the marina that we don't think is all because of us. That's where the marina is at right now. They want to have a conversation with the city. So hopefully we can work out some solutions. I mean, the bottom line is marina doesn't want to spend any money. The city doesn't want to spend any money. Somebody's going to need... I mean, we're happy to issue them a permit to dredge that material out. The Resource Conservation District and the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency has surveyed that area and has looked at the invasive weeds, the milfoil, and they definitely want to do a project in there. But they don't even want to go in with their hand crews because of how deep the muck is in the Ski Run Marina. So we were saying this would be good, do it now in the summer. And they're saying, actually, we think it might be better to do it in the spring. And they like to pull weeds in the spring when they're just coming up, like it's a little bit late right now. So anyway, we're going to be talking some more. It's a good example, though, of the kind of things Patty and I were talking with the executives and the scientists about nearshore issues, is that... a lot of our agencies are compartmentalized. Like there's a weed program, there's a marina permit, you know, there's the TMDL, and a lot of these things are related, and we all collectively need to do a better job of integrating that and looking for opportunities. And maybe there's ways to reduce some of the marina's monitoring requirements on one hand and have them do more, you know, related to that. And the other interesting thing too that we're investigating, which relates to a violation that's not in your report, will be in next quarters, is we got a report from South Tahoe PUD that they had a sewer line behind Chevy's in between the stormwater basins and the commercial area that was leaking. Like they, their video camera found the pipe had several breaches in the bottom of the sewer line. And that's the flow of the groundwater too. So
yeah.
We might be looking at having them do an investigation, but maybe, again, we could get some of this Prop 1 money or something to do a better, to get a better understanding of the groundwater influences. And this connects to the near shore, looking at causal assessments. What's really going on? What are all the factors causing increased algae growth and weed growth? And it's complicated in that particular area. So,
thanks. Any other questions? Mr. Dice?
Lori, with regard to your report on the aluminum problem in the Tahoe beach sands, if there's truly a dissolved aluminum problem, wouldn't we expect to see that in actual water samples from the lake?
Well, we saw it in water samples in the lake in the enclosed area when they dredged. So when they stirred up the sediment, we saw it. But when they sampled just the lake water, it was non-detect. And even there was two projects at Tahoe Keys. One was the Property Owners Association, their channels, the West Channel, and the Keys Marina dredged the East Channel. We had the Keys Marina do pre-dredging samples after we got these results, and they found non-detect in the water column, even in the marina, even in the, you know. And we knew the Keys were a very likely source because in addition to just the aluminum that might be naturally present, we know they used vast amounts of alum when the Keys were dredged. Laurel Ames, who used to serve on the board, was there in the 60s when they were dredging, and when they couldn't get the sediment to settle out, they were dumping bags of alum in the lagoons, and then they used alum at their water treatment plant that should have kept it there, but they violated our permit by using alum when they had clean water running through their clarifier, so they discharged aluminum. So we knew they were a source of aluminum. What surprised us is that when we went around and we found these numbers in some of the native sands, some of the spots we saw higher concentrations were near a stormwater pipe, you know, that could be more related to urban inputs. And in Tahoe City, we did allow importation of sand, like it came from Utah. We know those are like more likely to be a little bit higher. But related to Keys, we always know there's going to be that source.
Well, what governs, from a regulatory perspective, the lab created samples or the actual water samples?
We just specified that as a way for us to try to understand what might happen when water comes in contact with that sand. So, I mean, we got the actual data during dredging when the material was all stirred up in a very active, you know, they're dredging a lot of material and there's a lot of turbidity. And then we just had the sands, we had them test total aluminum in the sands, and then we wanted to make sure that the total aluminum concentrations were safe for humans. We were concerned about toddlers and babies rolling around the beach, and those numbers, the numbers for any kind of health risks are really high, and we don't have any numbers anywhere near that. But for aquatic toxicity, the numbers are really low. And we've never seen, you know, fish kills or anything associated, so we don't think it's really a big problem, but we just want to make sure that this material that they brought up from the lake bottom that they've now put on the beach, we want to just make sure we're not seeing any kind of increases associated with the waves lapping on the beach there. But like I said, that may be a number of years before that happens. I mean, unless we do get the big El Nino in the north, but I'm hearing the El Nino is going to be in the south. So anyway, it may be a little while, but. Yeah, we don't think it's a huge, huge deal. I think it's mostly a deal for dredging. You know, and because there are a lot of projects being proposed, not just for dredging because of the lake dropping, but also because of the milfoil issues and other invasive species, that dredging may be a technique in some cases. We want to just make sure we're not making things worse. You know, and some people have said, well, maybe we want toxic conditions to kill the invasive species, but in general, the invasive species are hardier than the native nearshore fish. They're the ones that are most sensitive, and they're already under stress from the invasive species, so we don't necessarily want to create more stressful situations for them. So,
thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Okay. Our next item is the triennial review.